outlook is okay, right? It could be much worse, but there's still a lot of risk to the outlook. And that's kind of the confidence band around our point estimate forecast. And I still think those risks are tilted slightly to the downside.
You are listening to C-Suite Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.
Welcome to C-Suite Perspectives, a signature series by the Conference Board. C-Suite Perspectives are conversations that take an objective, nonpartisan look at a range of subjects that matter most to business leaders. I'm Stéphanie Guichard, Senior Economist and Head of Global Business Indicators at the Conference Board and guest host of today's episode. In today's conversation, we will discuss the latest U.S. Consumer Confidence Index, as well as our outlook for the global economy. Joining me today is Dana Peterson, the Chief Economist and Leader of the Economy, Strategy and Finance Center at the Conference Board. Welcome, Dana.
Hi, Stephanie. It's great to be here.
Hey, Dana. So let's start with the March Consumer Confidence Survey. It just came out. So can you take us through the main takeaways?
Sure. The main takeaway is that consumer confidence was little changed from month to month in March. And certainly over the last 6 months, it's basically been moving sideways. It hasn't broken out to the upside or the downside. So it's not really telling us exactly how consumers are feeling. But certainly within the report, there are a lot of mixed feelings, certainly as the present situation, the present conditions measure ticked up a bit, but the expectations ticked down, more or less offsetting each other.
Oh, great. So can you tell us a bit more about what triggered the expectations to come down this month?
Sure. Well, the expectations gauge is made up of three components: business conditions, employment outlook, and future incomes. And all three of those measures were a little bit worse in the month in terms of confidence. And so those three things weighed on the measure. And indeed, it's back below 80. And 80 is the threshold. Well, anything below 80 indicates that consumers think that a recession is on the way. However, we do ask consumers point blank, do you believe a recession is going to happen at some point over the next 12 months? And for the most part, fewer and fewer have been saying, yes, there's going to be a recession. So on balance, consumers are probably not anticipating a recession, even though the expectations gauge dip below 80% or 80 again this month.
Okay, and do you see some type of differentiation between the age groups or the income groups?
Sure. In the month, people who were age 55 and older were a little bit more optimistic than everyone else. And certainly by income, folks in the middle, between $55,000 and $99,000 were less optimistic, and everyone else outside of those bands was more optimistic. But really, when we look at these gauges, when we average them out over the last 6 months, there's really not much of a story. It just seems like all consumers in general are feeling, you know, mixed about the outlook and mixed about current conditions. So there's no real trend either by income or even by age.
Okay, so in the past few months, consumers were quite worried about the high level of prices, about inflation. Do you see some improvements on this front?
Well, when we look at the expectations gauge for inflation 1 year out, that has improved materially. We saw a little bit of an uptick in March. It tipped up to 5.3%, but it's just above 5.2%, which is the low that we've seen almost in years. So for the most part, consumers are believing that in the future, inflation is going to cool. But certainly in the present situation, in the write-in questions, there's still a lot of concern about inflation, about prices, especially food and energy prices being elevated. But the good news is that we are seeing somewhat fewer complaints about gasoline prices, but that could potentially turn around, certainly as we're hearing in the news that gasoline prices may be rising over the summer season when most people are on vacation. So we're going to be watching that very closely. But in general, inflation expectations have come off materially, and that's something that the Federal Reserve Board wants to see.
Okay, great. So you mentioned the writing responses. So was there anything in those writing responses that's worth mentioning about what are the main concerns of consumers these days?
Yes, apart from the inflation readings, consumers for another month continue to highlight the political climate as something that they're concerned about. Certainly we know the elections, the presidential elections and the congressional elections are later this year, and certainly we're in a protracted period of campaigning. And so consumers are starting to take note, and certainly how consumers feel about the economy, their personal incomes, inflation, labor markets, all of those pieces are gonna play a role when they go to the polls in November. So that's also something that we'll be keeping close watch on over the course of this year.
You mentioned that consumers are a bit more worried about the future, especially the job market. They're still a bit worried about inflation. So how does it translate into how they feel about their finances?
Sure. We ask a separate question that's not in the headline or in the present situation or the expectations gauge about consumer finances. We ask them how they feel about those finances in the future and also currently. And both measures were down somewhat in March. And I think that's important because finances reflect not only what you're bringing home, your incomes, but also the impact of inflation on your purchasing power. So as we know, consumers are still complaining about inflation, prices being high. And so it's not surprising that that's feeding into their perceptions about financial conditions for their households.
So let's talk about how this is translating into their buying plan. So the survey typically looks at their intention to buy durable goods. So how have these plans changed over the past few months, especially with the higher interest rates?
Actually, no, and it's still heading in the same direction, that's downward. Consumers are continuing to indicate that they're not interested in buying big ticket items like cars or appliances that require financing or even homes. And certainly when we look at those gauges on a 6-month smooth average, because from month to month it's really choppy, but if you smooth it out over 6 months, the trend has been downward for all three of those pieces, for housing, big ticket items like cars, and also for appliances. And that's really not surprising. Interest rates have risen very aggressively over a short period of time. The Fed is attempting and actually succeeding little by little to bring down inflation, but that means interest rates are highest that we've seen in years, and that they're probably gonna remain high for a few more months now. But we do anticipate that the Fed is going to start cutting interest rates around the middle of this year, probably June. Maybe they'll cut by 75 to 100 basis points, which should give consumers some relief. But currently, right now, consumers are still facing very elevated interest rates for things they need to finance, and certainly for mortgage rates. And so it's not surprising that they're still kind of down or pessimistic about buying anything that requires financing.
Okay, so are they more keen on buying services?
Well, it's interesting. We asked a special question this month that we've asked in the past about services. What are you planning to spend more or less on? And we didn't ask it in terms of, are you going to buy more goods versus services? We just asked, what kinds of services are you planning on buying more of? And similar to previous readings, the last reading I think was about 6 months ago, they said they plan to spend more on healthcare and motor vehicle services. And healthcare is something that everybody needs, and certainly we know healthcare costs are elevated. But motor vehicle services also include insurance, and we know that consumers from the CPI measure and also from the personal consumption expenditure deflator, that consumers have been paying a lot more money for car insurance as well as home insurance. And the reason is that car insurance is more expensive because cars are more expensive, they're more high tech. It costs more to fix them if they break or to replace them if they're damaged or stolen. So it's not surprising that consumers are saying, hey, this is eating up more of my budget. Interestingly, they also said they want to spend more on lodging for personal travel. So that means consumers are still looking to go on vacation, but they also said they're planning to spend less on entertainment. So I'm guessing, you know, once they get to wherever they're going, they're just going to hang out in the hotel because they're not going to go to the entertainment spot. So that's pretty fascinating. But certainly, in general, we're seeing consumers continue to shift their service spending to things that they need and less towards things that are highly discretionary.
Yeah, interesting. And I was also thinking maybe if they don't buy cars, it makes sense that they are willing to spend more money on maintenance because they have older cars that need more maintenance. So it's kind of a substitution between buying a new car and maintaining the old one.
Absolutely.
Okay. Overall, what does this mean for household spending this year?
Sure. I think what it's telling us is that we're going to continue to see a trend of spending less on durable goods. And certainly when we look at the personal consumption expenditure data from the NIPAs, that consumers are shifting back into a more balanced degree of spending on goods versus services. And certainly consumers are still spending on travel, but it's, you know, curious that they're not going to spend on entertainment. And that could be entertainment at home or even entertainment outside of the home. So I think that, you know, gathering all these pieces to the puzzle, consumers are still kind of uncertain about the future. They're not overly optimistic, but they're certainly not incredibly pessimistic. They're kind of in the middle. They're being buffeted by a lot of forces. On the one hand, many are still working, but they're still concerned about layoffs in the future. Many consumers experience higher wage growth, but those wages are not rising as much. They're concerned about business conditions going forward, and they're also concerned about the fact that there's still a lot of inflation out there that's eating into their purchasing power. And moreover, interest rates are high, and they're not certain as to when interest rates are going to start coming down. So with all of this, we're still in a wait-and-see mode. And certainly if the Fed, and I'm sure they're looking at this, FOMC participants are looking at this, they're going to be looking at the different components and saying, there's a lot going on with the consumer, but the key thing is that inflation expectations are coming down. Despite all the challenges the consumer is facing, they still have confidence that the central bank can bring inflation back down and it's not becoming embedded into their psyches and consequently having negative implications on consumer spending going forward.
Thank you. So we're going to take a short break and be right back with more of my conversation with Dana Peterson.
What does the future of work mean for your employees? How will your company navigate ESG? Will there be a global recession? At The Conference Board, our experts translate the latest research and economic analysis into insights and real-time problem solving for your organization. Membership at The Conference Board provides your team with an assortment of knowledge from economics, marketing and communications, ESG, public policy, and human capital. As a member, you'll have access to our center experts, member-exclusive events, data and benchmarking tools, and peer sharing that will help you understand the present and shape the future. Consider becoming a Conference Board member today by visiting www.conference-board.org.
Welcome back to C-Suite Perspectives. I'm your host, Stephanie Guichard, Senior Economist at the Conference Board. I'm joined by Dana Peterson, Chief Economist at the Conference Board. So Dana, let's talk a bit more broadly about the global economy. So what's the outlook for global growth this year?
Sure. We actually slightly upwardly revised our forecast for global growth this year. Last month we had 2.8%, 2.9%, and now it's ticked up to 3%. And certainly when you look at the path, last year was 3.2%. We're expecting 3% this year and 3.1% next year. You're kind of in a really tight band. But even within that, there are a lot of stories where you still have some economies that are reeling from the impact of very high inflation and consequently significant tightening of monetary policy and financial conditions. Then you also have some economies that have already pretty much brought inflation back down to the tolerance levels for the central banks, and they're looking at cutting. Indeed, some banks are cutting. So this is really going to be kind of a race or a horse race in terms of which economies get back to tolerable inflation and central banks can cut interest rates, and also how much are they going to cut interest rates. But we think all in all, with these interest rate cuts, or at least a reduction in the degree of tightness of monetary policy, that we should see better growth later on this year and into 2025.
So which economy will be driving real GDP growth? I mean, you mentioned some kind of different path in terms of monetary policy and different stages in the cycle. So just take us through the
Sure, absolutely. So there are a few economies that really drive activity. So there's the U.S., there's Europe as a whole, especially Western Europe. We tend to look at the euro area plus the U.K. There's also China, and I would also toss in India. So again, like I said, there are lots of stories. So the U.S., we are expecting the economy to grow by 2.1% this year compared to 2.5% last year. So within that 2.1%, we do anticipate that there's going to be a soft patch in the middle of the year. And a lot of that's going to reflect the fact that consumers are probably running out of gas. A lot of the supports that consumers had in previous years, from fiscal policy, from stimulus checks, from quitting and getting big increases in wages, and also businesses not letting them go, also supporting their incomes. And then I would also add use of credit to finance spending. I think all those things are going to, we think all those things are going to fade. And certainly we've already seen in the first couple of readings on consumer spending that consumers are dialing back on spending for the first quarter of this year. And that'll probably be, you know, pretty weak over the course of the second and third quarters. And that's really a function of the Fed's tightening monetary policy. So this is all part of the plan. When the Fed raises interest rates, usually the housing market feels it first, then businesses feel it and pull back on investments, and then consumers respond. And so we're seeing this all in the progress. And this is probably going to be the last piece of the puzzle in terms of the Fed's actions. But still in all, we think that the labor market is going to hold up. You still have at least three industries that are struggling to fill workers. And so they're still churning out big payroll gains. Apart from that, we're seeing modest modest employment growth. And so that all suggests the unemployment rate's not going to rise very much. We do anticipate that inflation is going to trend back sustainably to the 2% target probably sometime this year in the second half, and that the Fed can probably start cutting interest rates by the middle of this year. So that's the U.S. piece of the puzzle. Even though there's kind of a soft patch in the middle, the U.S. is still going to be a notable contributor. But Europe is probably not going to contribute that much because Europe is still recovering from the cost of living crisis when energy prices surged when Russia's war on Ukraine began, and essentially Russia shut off Western Europe. And then the ECB and the Bank of England and a number of other central banks hiked interest rates. And so we're expecting that, for the most part, the ECB and the Bank of England, they're in holding mode right now, and they're probably going to look to start cutting rates also around the middle of the year, maybe June. But still, in all, there's not going to be much growth there. In fact, our growth rate for Europe is about 0.5% this year, and for the euro area, about 0.6. And the United Kingdom, just 0.1 after it fell into a mild recession. 0.4 after it fell into a mild recession in the previous year. Now, because advanced economies are only going to be contributing but so much, emerging markets are going to make up a lot of the difference to get us to that 3% growth I talked about for 2024. And that their story is really going to be about China and India. So China is the interesting story. So the government posted an official growth rate of around 5%. So give or take 5%. Our original forecast was something close to 4%. And then once the government announced that new target, which is actually the same target that they had last year, we raised our forecast to 4.6% for China. And the reason why is we do anticipate that the government will provide some additional fiscal stimulus to get us from that original 4% up to something close to 5%. It's not clear of what all that's going to be, because we know China's still very challenged by their ongoing housing crisis, and consumers are not very willing to spend, and they're engaging in this precautionary savings because of the housing crisis. But we're seeing that trade is picking up for China. Exports have picked up. And also China, after many months of deflation, is starting to see faster inflation. So that's a sign of demand as well. So we're expecting that China is going to contribute most of that 3% GDP growth we anticipate for this year. And now India. India is probably going to grow the fastest. We have 7.1% growth for India for 2024. And that's the fastest growth rate we see among many of the economies that we follow. And the contribution from India to global GDP growth at 3% is also going to be substantial. India is certainly benefiting from its demographic dividend, where it has a younger, many, many younger people who are also very highly educated. And also India has been very much focused on growth. So this is the story. So within that, I would also add that other emerging markets, some of them have already started to cut interest rates as their inflation gauges have fallen back within the ranges that the central banks prefer. So many emerging markets are actually ahead of the game in terms of cutting interest rates. But all in all, a very eclectic outlook for this year, but still growth averaging around 3%, just below 3.2% that we saw last year.
Okay, well, that's a lot we covered in a few minutes. So we went all around the world. Maybe we can talk a bit more about Europe and any specifics about the different European countries. Is Germany getting out of recession, for instance?
Sure. So we do have growth for Germany at 0.1% for 2024, and that's after a dip of 0.1% in 2023. So Germany is kind of the sick man of Europe right now, and that's a function of two things. Number one, Germany is a big trading partner with China. So whenever China is experiencing weak growth, that directly impacts Germany. And also, Germany is still recovering from the manufacturing slowdown as energy prices surged in the wake of the war, Russia's war in Ukraine. So that's going to be a big challenge. And so we think Germany is going to kind of climb out of the pit this year, but it's going to be difficult. And certainly when we look at the United Kingdom, as I mentioned, we're looking at just 0.4% growth this year after it kind of dipped into recession last year. Now, interestingly for Japan just missed recession last year, but had a very weak second half. And we think that growth is going to be around 1% this year after growing by 1.9% this year. But the good news is that Japan is starting to see notable degrees of inflation after almost two to three decades of disinflation and deflation. And that prompted the central bank to consider raising interest rates to get rid of, well, they did raise interest rates and they're no longer have negative interest rate policy. And they also removed the yield control policy that's been in place for some time. So that's good news for Japan, even though we think the growth rate's gonna be somewhat slower. But certainly within Europe, the UK and Germany are going to be kind of weak. And so we're really gonna be relying on the rest of Europe, France, Italy, the Nordics, Spain, Portugal, to really contribute to that pretty modest growth rate of just about 0.5% for Europe this year.
We talk about growth. I think we talked a bit about inflation. So my understanding is a bit more inflation in Japan, which is good news, a bit more inflation in China, which is also good news. And in the rest of the world, disinflation is expected to continue. Is that correct?
Yes.
And as a result, central banks are going to continue cutting interest rates for those that have already started. And in other countries you mentioned, you expect the Fed to start cutting rates mid-year. And the ECB?
Also around mid-year.
Okay. What do you see as the main risk to this? It's a good outlook in a way. So what would be the main risk?
Sure. I mean, the outlook is okay, right? It could be much worse, but there's still a lot of risk to the outlook. And that's kind of the confidence band around our point estimate forecast. And I still think those risks are tilted slightly to the downside. So we still have a lot of upward inflation pressures. And certainly in the US and Europe, wage growth is still quite sticky, sticky to the downside, and wages are still rising in those economies, mainly because we're seeing significant labor shortages. And those labor shortages are a function of low birth rates plus aging population. So putting those two things together, you don't have enough workers, and hence companies are supplementing that, yes, with technology, but also with raising wages to keep the workers they have, meaning retention, and also to attract new people. So that's an upward inflation pressure. You're also going to continue to see upward inflation pressures from the reorientation of supply chains globally, where some companies are moving their supply chains from China to ASEAN economies, especially Vietnam and to a certain degree India. And also in the US, you have a lot of supply chains coming home. So that means, yes, we've had a lot of building of factories, but that costs money. And certainly you have to pay the factory workers the US wage, which is probably higher than what you might have paid workers in either China or ASEAN economies. So reorientation of supply chains, you also have the global energy transition, which means lots of investments in new technology and new infrastructure, and also retrofitting what you already have to make it green. The green transition is going to take decades, but you have to start now, and all that's quite expensive. We still have hot wars going on in several areas of the global economy. We still have the war in Ukraine, which could take on an even more intense, deadly focus, given the fact that there was a terrorist attack in Russia, and certainly the Russian government is thinking that this has something to do with Ukraine. And so this could be used as, you know, the reason to intensify attacks in Ukraine. And certainly you're seeing massive disruptions in food production and shipping from Ukraine. A lot of that food's ending up in Europe, and it's causing disinflation, and farmers are out in the streets rioting and picketing. So you also have the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas, and that could also take an even deadlier turn if that expands, if the war shifts to a different direction. But even still, you're seeing spillover effects from that war on trade in the region, where you have organizations like the Houthi rebels who are in league with Iran contributing to disruptions in trade through the Red Sea. And of course, just this morning, we had the horrific accident in the Baltimore River, where a freighter crashed into one of the main bridges, blocking the entire Baltimore port, and also cutting off a major artery for trade, and also potentially significant loss of life. So that's going to have negative implications for trade, for transportation and infrastructure that could also feed up to impact the global economy. So you have all these different things going on that are downside risks to the outlook. And certainly we're watching very closely the banking sector in the U.S., which is quite exposed to commercial real estate as office space becomes more plentiful given hybrid work. But on the upside, I'd like to end on a happy note. On the upside, we do think that we could continue to see improvements in productivity. So productivity growth has been strong, especially in the U.S., given the fact that we have seen hours falling back to 2019 levels, but GDP rising. So that means, you know, when you look at the equation for productivity, that's strong productivity. But we think that productivity can be longer lasting, especially as governments around the world are investing in infrastructure and investing in R&D. And also many corporations are investing in technology and upskilling and retraining their people. So all those things are positive for GDP growth, not only now, but also going forward.
Oh, great. I was going to ask you about the upside risk. So that's very, very good. So any final word on what we should take home from all this new recent data?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world. While our forecasts have been gradually improving, we've been upwardly revising them month to month. It's still, as I said, you know, a very diverse story underneath the hood there. And there's still a lot of concerns about inflation, and certainly when interest rates are going to come off. So we need to watch all of these issues closely and also keep an eye on the risks, both to the upside and the downside.
Thank you, Dana. This has been a great conversation. So thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. Always great to be here.
You have been listening to C-Suite Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.